third and final case for oral argument this morning is the Save Our Neighborhood and Others Appellants versus the City of Sioux Falls and Others Appellees. For the appellants, we have Mr. Ronald Parsons, a attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellees, we have Mr. James Moore, an attorney also from Sioux Falls. Justice Wilbur has disqualified herself on this case, and the court has called upon Presiding Judge Warren Johnson of the 4th Judicial Circuit to sit in Justice Wilbur's place. With that, Mr. Parsons, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Mr. Moore. As with many cases, there is a subtext to this appeal. One of my goals here today is to try to keep that subtext separate from what is really just a pure legal question involving the proper construction of statutes enacted by the legislature to confer the power of annexation upon municipalities to bring land into their corporate boundaries. The requirements for municipal annexation are the subject of great concern and are a matter of great importance to every city, town, and county in the state, and so the opportunity for this court to provide clarity to the statute is certainly welcomed by all. Municipalities, of course, are creatures of statute, and they have no power to extend their boundaries except as expressly conferred by the statutes that the legislature has enacted. And this court has said many times that those statutes must be strictly complied with. In other words, there's not wiggle room on these. If the statutes aren't followed, then the annexation is invalid. Now, under the current statutory framework, there are two types of municipal annexations. There's a voluntary annexation, where at least three-fourths of the owners of a property or a group of properties petition the city to be annexed, and that's found in SDCL 941 today. The second type is annexing without a petition, also called a forcible annexation by the city, and that process is set forth in SDCL 944.1 through 4.11. But the critical point is that both methods require annexation resolutions in order for the annexation to be valid and complete. And that's where we suggest SDCL 945 comes in. That says no such resolution describing unplatted territory therein may be adopted until it has been approved by the Board of County Commissioners in the county where it's located. So what is that statute talking about is the question for the court here, the only question. It's talking about, we suggest, annexation resolutions. That's the topic of the chapter. So which annexation resolutions is the question? Well, it says in the statute, those describing unplatted territory. And so we contend that's the only qualifying criteria under the plain meaning of the statute. And if the legislature wanted to impose an additional criteria, it would have said no such resolution done without a petition involving unplatted territory. I mean, they could have enacted that change over these past 100 years in 2 minutes. But it didn't. So we believe that this meaning of the statute is readily determined by reading. That's where, again, the Esling decision comes in. There, we had a voluntary annexation by petition done pursuant to SDCL 941, which is just like we have here, voluntary. The validity of the annexation was at issue because the question in that case was whether the city's rezoning of that land was valid. And in answering that question, this court had to determine whether or not the annexation was valid. Where did this court look? It looked to the statutes. It said municipal annexation is subject to county approval, subject to approval by the county commissioners if the territory is unplatted, as it was in this case, SDCL 945. And so, according to the city, SDCL 945 has nothing to do with voluntary annexations. But this court, when it was determining the validity of an annexation for purposes of determining the validity of a rezoning, that's where it looked, SDCL 945.
Now the annexation you are challenging has gone forward. What kind of relief are you seeking from this court?
We're seeking that the court reverse and order that the writ of certiorari and writ of prohibitions be granted, that the court erred in not granting them. That would invalidate the annexation. And so this land would no longer be in the city of Sioux Falls until the city follows the statutes properly and annexes it again, if that's what it chooses
to do. Which, under your theory, would be commencing with the Lincoln County Commission.
That's correct. Our contention is, because it's unplatted territory, that no such resolution can be passed.
Has the Lincoln County Commission ever objected to this procedure?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Is that relevant?
I don't think so, no. These are statutory, jurisdictional, if you will, requirements in order for an annexation to be valid. It'd be a simple matter. I mean, all they had to do was, they have forms ready to go, they send it over, it gets put on the county's agenda, but then Lincoln County does have a say, and they can look at whatever they want to in terms, you know, if they, once the city's annexed, is the problem. That's why these cities, these statutes make sense, as we suggest they provide, is that once county land is annexed by a municipality, the county loses all zoning jurisdiction over that piece of land. That was the subject of the Esslin case.
I thought the city already had zoning because it's within the 3-mile limit.
This is joint jurisdiction. So the county and city have to sign off right now on everything. Once it's annexed, the county has no role to play. So it makes sense that the legislature would give them a say before land is swept out of their zoning jurisdiction.
You're referring to the Essling decision, but was 945 directly the issue in that case?
No, not directly the issue.
Does that make it dicta in this case?
Well, and I don't think so, but really, you know, whether it's dicta or whether it's not dicta, certainly this court can take a fresh look at the statutes. That was important at the trial court level, we thought, but you know, we want the court to get the statutes right, and so this court's not bound. I'm not saying this court's hands are tied at all by Essling, but I think this court got it right in Essling. We think you just read it, and it's separated out, it's a freestanding requirement, no such resolution with one qualifier involving unplatted territory, shall be passed without the county having a say. We think that ends the matter. But even if you dig deeper and start pulling the books off the shelves and looking at the entire statutory history, the title, the repealed statutes, we believe the result is the same. First of all, as I said, the interpretation of SDCL 945 as it now stands makes sense, because otherwise a county loses its zoning jurisdiction without any say. It should be able to acquiesce whenever it loses its zoning jurisdiction. And although it's called a voluntary petition, as noted, it only takes 3/4 of landowners to petition in. And so you have, potentially in a case, 25% of the affected landowners being swept into a city out of a county's zoning jurisdiction without the county having any say.
But why is that relevant? That's an equity argument, and we're just trying to figure out what the legislature said.
I agree, and if we get into legislative history and the purposes behind it, that's what I'm addressing now. But I mean, certainly an absurd result would never be ratified by this court, and I think this result makes perfect sense, and that's what the argument's directed at. But when you look at the legislative history itself, the statutory scheme that this court described in the Rhodes decision, which the city has relied on greatly, that is essentially the same statutory scheme that was in place from territorial times through the 1939 code and up to that point. At that point, there were three different types of annexation methods. And there, the statutes specifically limited requirement of county approval was specifically limited to a third type of petition that involved annexation of unplatted lands. And it was specifically set out that way. And that's what the Rhodes decision was saying when it noted that you don't need county approval for a voluntary petition. But the statute that this court was interpreting in that case was repealed 4 years later. And the no such resolution language never appeared in the statutes until after the Rhodes decision. And so the Rhodes decision has nothing to say about what the language no such resolution shall be passed without county approval. That language didn't appear until 1955. So I would suggest Rhodes can be set aside in terms of what that language means. But after 1955 and up until 1979, it's clear that under the statutes, and if you look at the current statutory, or I'm sorry, not the current statutory framework, but the 1979 statutes. There we've already, as they existed, and that's page 95 of our appendix. There we have it broken into SDCL chapters by then. And we have SDCL chapter 941, and that's the voluntary petition that we're talking about here. And then there's another statute, SDCL 942, specifically directed at annexation authorized without a petition. That's a forcible annexation. And it ties that. It says that shall be done either unplatted, platted or unplatted, it applies to that statute. And that shall be done pursuant to SDCL 943 through SDCL 945. SDCL 945 is the requirement that no such resolution shall be passed without county approval. So if you're looking at the 1979 statutes, again, you do have a tying of SDCL 945, specifically by statute, that is incorporated expressly in SDCL 942 as being tied directly to annexations without petitions, forcible.
But that was repealed.
That's right. That's the keystone to this case. That statute, which connected 945, the requirement of county approval, to forcible petitions, was repealed. And so was SDCL 944. And so was that entire scheme. And it was reenacted as a new set of requirements as they now exist. And as they now exist, forcible petitions are set forth in SDCL 9-4-4.1 through 4.11. And the requirement of county approval is a different statute, and it's not included in that scheme. And this court, when in the Smith case, when it talked about the method for forcible petitions, it went through the entire process. It never mentioned SDCL 945, because that was now reenacted separately as a standalone requirement. And so, when you go to the statutes as we have them now, as they now exist. We have SDCL-941 that talks about voluntary petitions. No limitation, no mention of whether or not county approval is required. Then the method for forcible petitions is set forth in SDCL 9-4-4.4-4.1 through 11. And these statutes were passed, enacted together, and they all reference each other. They reference it as an entire scheme. 9-4-4.1 says, except as provided by SDCL-941. So except for voluntary petitions, this statutory scheme for forcible petitions, these requirements apply, and they require a study. The next statute says, based on the study provided for in 4.1. And so these statutes all reference each other. 4.4 talks about this process being governed by 4.2 and 4.11. So this is a self-contained, as passed by the legislature, scheme that applies now just to forcible annexations. Then we have the separate statute. And if you're going to talk about legislative history, and the purposes and harmonizing, court's also allowed to look at the title of a statute, this court has said. The title of this statute, Annexation of Unplatted Territory Subject to Approval by County Commissioners. It doesn't say only annexations that are voluntary. It says all.
Are you reading the title from session law or the code commission?
From the code.
That's just a catch line.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the code commissions.
Right, and my understanding is that this court looks at the structure and title of the code. The legislation itself, no, that's not the title of the legislation itself, because it was the subject of three or four different amendments. But in any event, the language of the statute only has the qualifier unplatted territory. And so now, as a standalone requirement, intentionally delinked from The forcible petition process, as I read these statutes, intentionally delinked and reenacted, as you see in the next statutes, as its own legislature knows its own separate statute now. We contend that this legislative requirement applies to all municipal annexations that involve unplatted territory. And if that's not what they meant, they could fix it, like I said, in a minute. I mean, but that's the way the statutes read. That's the way I suggest this court read the statutes plainly in Essling. And I think statutes should be enforced as they're written, not as how the people wish they had been written or hope they had been written or how they used to be written. One last thing on the doctrine of the last antecedent has been brought up in the briefs. The argument is, well, no such resolution has to go to the last antecedent. But the problem is, the antecedent has been repealed. I mean, the statutes that it used to refer to, those have vanished. And so the doctrine of the last antecedent, I would suggest, is not applicable here because no such resolution, what it used to refer to, that's gone. So the county has a role to play here, I respectfully suggest. This is a pure statutory case, and we accept the court's judgment, but we ask the court to reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Mr. Moore, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. James Moore on behalf of the City of Sioux Falls and the Sioux Falls City Council. I think it's a good thing this case is before the court because it involves a question of first impression, and that is whether a landowner-initiated petition under SDCL Section 9-4-1 is nevertheless subject to the requirements of Section 9-4-5. That is not an issue that this court has directly addressed before. I think it's also good that the case is here because I think 9-4-5 is clearly ambiguous on its face. You can't get past the first three words of that statute without wondering, no such resolution. Well, what resolution are we talking about? And it's not clear from 9-4-5 itself. You have to look somewhere else. And lastly, I think it's good that the case is here because there is dicta in both the Essling and the Rhodes decisions that are contradictory. You simply cannot read the statement on which I rely from the Rhodes case and the statement on which Mr. Parsons relies from the Essling case and make them harmonious or consistent. They conflict. So I think it's appropriate that all of this be cleared up, but I don't think that the outcome of the case is in doubt. First of all, I think there's no question that the statute is ambiguous. As I said, the first three words, no such resolution, such has to have some meaning. The argument that Mr. Parsons advocates today essentially negates such altogether, and the statute should simply say no resolution.
Do you think the statute's always been ambiguous, or it just came about with the subsequent amending and codifications?
The latter, Your Honor. If you go back to 1955, there's no ambiguity in the statute. And you can look at the page in the appendix where Chapter 215 is set forth from the 1955 Sessions Laws. It's on page 96 of the appendix. And essentially, there's a process there in Section 45.2906, which is the section at the time that dealt with involuntary annexations, those initiated by the municipality, not voluntary annexations initiated by the landowner. And essentially, the process is that the governing body declares that it wants to annex platted or unplatted territory. The next step is that it declares in a proper resolution its intent to annex, and that's the kind of resolution that we're ultimately talking about, and you can simply trace it through. The next step is that such resolution has to be published. The next step is that the municipality should consider objections to such resolution and adopt such resolution with or without amendment. And lastly, the fifth step, or fourth step, no such resolution may be adopted until it's approved by the county. So if you go back to the 1955 legislation, and this is, I think, what Judge Teedy did and what he held in his decision, there's absolutely no question what kind of resolution is being referred to. It's an involuntary resolution, which is not the same thing as a resolution under 941. As Mr. Parsons pointed out, there are clearly two kinds of there are not only two procedures, two methods for annexation, there are two kinds of resolutions. in the chapter. One is a resolution that accomplishes the annexation. It is the legislative act by the municipality that declares the property annexed. The other kind of resolution is a resolution of intent that we have interest in bringing this property within the city limits or the municipality's limits. And 941 talks about one kind of resolution. At the time, 2906 talked about only the involuntary resolution, and so no such resolution was clearly limited in that context. Now, Mr. Parsons is right. The scheme, the statutes have changed, and what happened, I think it's very clear if you go then to the 1967 code. And if you look in 1967, we have section 9-4-1 dealing with voluntary petitions brought by the landowner. Then you have sections 942, 943, and 944, which were later repealed in 1979, but all of which dealt with involuntary annexations. And then you have 945, which still refers to no such resolution. And if you want to trace this back through, you can take the, again, on page 96, and you can conform the various paragraphs of 45.2906 to section 94-2, 9-4-3, 9-4-4, and 9-4-5. It tracks all the way through. You know, when I started practicing law, my dad told me, one of the pieces of advice he gave me is he said, you should annotate your own code. And I think that was easier to do in 1950 when he started practicing law than it was when I started practicing law, and certainly than it is today. But in doing exactly this exercise, I understand exactly what he was talking about and why what he said was good advice. It tracks. It is not difficult to understand when you take the sections and match them up and see what the legislature actually did. It's very clear. Yes?
Why is county approval required for any annexation?
Well, I think it's a question of deference and respect for the authority of a different governing body, Your Honor. And at the time that the code originally set these provisions out in 1939, the county actually had the authority to make the annexation decision with respect to property that was unplatted. And so I think the important distinction is between platted and unplatted and why that matters. And I think it's a question of if it is platted, and what this court decided in the Rhodes decision is, what does that mean to be platted? And there were two different statutes that it had to choose from in deciding what platted meant. And it said what it means is it's already been before the city and the city has approved the plat. So the city's already taken a look at it. Now the city has some jurisdiction over that piece of property. Right. With respect to unplatted land, that isn't true. It's still subject to county zoning. It's still subject to county regulation. The city hasn't had any say at that point. I think that's why the distinction exists.
It seems to me on unplatted territory, the impact on Lincoln County and the neighborhood is the same whether it's a landowner-initiated petition or a city-initiated petition and involuntary. The impact on the neighborhood and the impact any interest the county might have would be the same, wouldn't it?
Well, I think there's already been a question about the three-mile limit in which the city and the county exercise joint authority essentially until property is actually annexed. And I think what that recognizes is that once you get within that limit, the property is likely to be annexed at some point. I don't disagree with you that once it's annexed, the effect on the county is the same, whether it's platted or unplatted. But ultimately, that is a legislative distinction that exists in the statute. And it can't go away. One thing that is clear in this case, and this is in the record, is that the city of Sioux Falls' practice for years has been to provide adjoining counties notice of a landowner-initiated annexation petition. And in fact, there is a form that was in evidence before the circuit court in this case that actually has a checklist of everyone to whom the petition needs to be provided. And one of those people, because this is a Lincoln County property, was Paul S. Leeson, who's the director of planning for Lincoln County. And the testimony that was submitted at the circuit court is that Lincoln County was given notice and that Lincoln County did not object in any way. And that is, in fact, the standard protocol between the City of Sioux Falls and Lincoln County in these cases. This was not unusual.
Giving the county notice is a far cry from the argument of opposing counsel that they, in essence, have a veto power over it.
That's true, Your Honor. And my point is not that what the city is doing is necessarily correct. My point is that it is practiced based on an understanding of the statute that I think is correct. Mr. Parsons is really hearkening back to a statutory procedure that existed in 1939 and that was actually modified in 1955 by taking away county authority.
Do you think that's what the legislature intended in the 1950s? It was to say, well, county, you're entitled to notice, but you don't have a say.
Well, the county still had say with respect to unplatted land, but it had less say than it did before 1955 because under the 1939 code, it actually had the authority to make the decision. As of 1955, it only had the authority to give its consent once the city actually made a decision that it wanted to annex. But I think what ultimately I do want to address one part of Mr. Parsons' argument, and that is he says, well, I was talking about the 1967 code, and if you look at 945, it says no such resolution. So again, the question is, what resolution are we talking about? If you go to 944, it's very clear. Again, it's talking about an involuntary resolution, and you can see that in the 1955 session laws. Those statutes, 942, 943, and 944, were repealed in 1979, but they were replaced. It's not like the involuntary procedure went away. The involuntary procedure still exists. It's been changed. It's now in 944-4.1 through 944.11, and there's a specific study requirement that has been imposed, and so the process is much more detailed, and it's actually much more infrequent. The testimony in the case before the trial court here is that the most common method of annexation for the city of Sioux Falls, far and away, is a voluntary petition by a landowner. So,
isn't it hard though to get by the 79 change where the legislature specifically repealed that language that linked 5 to 2? I mean, there was the language at the end of section 2 that
I don't think it's hard to get by for two reasons. One is there's no doubt from the 1967 code and from the 1955 code what kind of resolution no such resolution was referring to. It was involuntary. So when 942, 43, and 44 were repealed and replaced, I think it's a great stretch to say that the legislature intended now that no such resolution went for the first time to encompass and refer to voluntary petitions under 941 when that had never been the case before. That would be, I think, a quantum leap for this court to suggest that that's what the legislature clearly intended through the 1979 amendments. And I don't think that's a reasonable construction, not only because it's clearly inconsistent with the 1955 legislation. It would extend the reach of 945 to someplace it had never been before, 941, but also because there's still a procedure for involuntary annexations. And there is still a separate kind of resolution in which is involved in a case involving involuntary annexations that's different from the kind of resolution that's talked about in 9-4-1. So I think ultimately that's the problem with Mr. Parsons' argument, and that's why I think that reliance on legislative history establishes that the correct reference for no such resolution is simply to involuntary petitions. I also think that's consistent with the Rhodes decision, and I understand Mr. Parsons' argument that was even decided before the 1955 legislation, but again, we had three options for annexation. One is a voluntary annexation, and the property has to be contiguous, but it didn't matter whether it was platted or unplatted. That's what the statute said. That's what Rhodes said. And then you have an involuntary petition, and in that instance, it matters whether it's platted or unplatted. That was true in 1939. It is still true today. It hasn't changed. And for that reason, I think it's misleading. I think it's ultimately incorrect to say that the structure has vanished. It hasn't. The structure is essentially the same today as it has always been. The details have changed. And I think what happened in 1979 is that someone failed to notice that the reference in 945 to no such resolution was no longer as clear as it used to be in 1955 or even in 1967. So I think that reliance on legislative history ultimately is dispositive of the case. I think you need to address Essling and Rhodes in some way, but at the end of the day, clearly there was no discussion in the Essling case about whether 945 was ambiguous. There was no discussion about legislative history. There was no consideration of case law. And ultimately, the result in the Essling decision would not change if the court had not mentioned the application of Section 9-4-5, which I think is why it's clearly dicta. I mean, the issue in Essling was not whether 9-4-5 applies to a voluntary petition brought under Section 9-4-1. So, unless the court has additional questions, I have nothing else.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you. Do you think that under 945, regardless of which type of annexation and it procedure it applies to, that if the county says, no, we don't give our permission, then the annexation doesn't go through?
I do think that's what the statute... Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think that's the case with respect to property that is unplatted, not with respect to property that is platted, because in that instance, under 945, it's not before the county.
I see.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Parsons, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Judge Johnson, I agree with Mr. Moore's answer to the question. The key to whether or not county approval is required is whether the property is platted or unplatted. And if it's unplatted, regardless how it was initiated, then our position is county approval is required. You know, whether or not the legislature at some point forgot to do something, missed something, and didn't do it, this court takes statutes as they're found. And the way the statutes now read today, the requirement of county approval has been separated out from these previously repealed statutes. And the argument has been made, well, no such resolution, what does that refer to? And so you should look to SDCL 9-4-4. But of course, as was mentioned, that statute was repealed. And when the legislature in 1979 pulled that language out of a prior existing scheme addressing forcible annexations, pulled it out, repealed everything else that was in there, established a new system, passed a new set of laws to govern that specific requirement that didn't include the no such resolution language, that has to be given meaning. I mean, when legislatures do something like that, this court accords meaning to that. And when they pull that out and make it a freestanding requirement, repeal the statute that links forcible annexations to county approval, this court should accord the legislature effect, should accord the language that it passed effect. And so we request that this court reverse and interpret these statutes as are written.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Court will be in recess.